If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Hi, Ted. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good to be with you.
Okay, so now let's talk concrete. The average person or the average family owes how much in credit card debt? Ted, what's the number here?
The average, according to TransUnion, is about $6,400.
Okay, so let's just take a family that has a $6,400 balance on their credit cards. A lot of people have a lot more. I know that for a fact. What are your top tips for paying this down?
My favorite is to get a 0% balance transfer credit card. So that's going to involve moving your existing high-cost debt over to a new card that won't charge interest, in some cases up to 21 months. The Wells Fargo Reflect and the Citi Simplicity are a couple of those 21-month options. So I know that that $6,400 amount sounds like a lot. If you divide that into 21 monthly installments, it works out to a little over $300 a month. That feels a lot more achievable. And avoiding interest for that length of time, I mean, depending on how long it takes you to pay it off, you could save hundreds, maybe even thousands of dollars. Really, with credit card debt, the two main considerations are bringing the interest rate down and bringing the term down. So if you can get 0% for 21 months, that's a pretty amazing deal.
So let's also talk about credit counselors. And, you know, I think a lot of people are reticent because they don't know who to trust. There are nonprofits that do this. Why do nonprofits get involved in this? Are they actually controlled by the credit card companies? Tell us what we should look for in a credit card counselor and what can they do for the consumer.
I am a big fan of nonprofit credit counseling. I actually would often put this second on my list of debt payoff tips. I still like the balance transfer approach, but not everybody can qualify. You typically need good credit. If you have more than $5,000 or $6,000 in debt, you might have trouble getting a limit high enough to move it all over. So nonprofit credit counseling is really great, especially if you have a lower credit score or a lot of debt. Reputable agencies like Money Management International and GreenPath, they can often negotiate something like a 7 or 8% rate over 4 or 5 years. A good thing to look for is accreditation from the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. They have a good list at nfcc.org. Their members are very reputable. It's a good question about, like, why does this thing exist? And it almost sounds too good to be true. The financial industry is willing to play ball with these entities because their biggest worry is that they don't get paid back. And that's part of why credit cards charge such high rates, is that it's not secured by an underlying asset like a home or a car. These nonprofit credit counselors have tactics that have been proven to work. So the idea is that they're willing to work with you. They're willing to cut you a break. They want to get paid back. This can actually be a good way to pay off your debt, protect your credit score. It's a lot better than some of the alternatives, like going delinquent or into default. I don't like the for-profit debt settlement thing because that tends to really trash your credit, but nonprofit credit counseling is a really good thing.
Is it possible, and I've heard this, can you actually call your credit card company yourself and try to negotiate a lesser interest rate or a reduction in your balance, or is that just an urban legend?
You can do that, and in fact, that works about 80% of the time. The reason it's not my favorite recommendation or two is just because there's this big question of, well, how much are they going to lower your rate? Honestly, they're probably not going to bring it down by all that much. I mean, yeah, every little bit counts, but let's face it, the average credit card rate is about 20% right now. Maybe if you're lucky, they take it down to 15. I mean, maybe if you're really lucky, they take it down to 12 or something like that. That's still relatively high cost debt, and there's no guarantees. I mean, this may not work at all. The 0% balance transfer approach tends to be for new customers. I don't really hear of anybody getting that deal from their current card issuer. You typically need to switch to someone else. The business case is that they're betting a lot of people don't pay it off within the allotted time, and then after that, the rate goes way up. So it's kind of a loss leader customer acquisition tool. I still think it can work very much to your advantage if you are disciplined about paying it off. But when it comes to asking for a lower rate, I just think there are better options out there, you know, like the balance transfer, like nonprofit credit counseling, maybe even getting a personal loan as a form of debt consolidation. Credit card rates are so high that you have a ways to go for it to become truly low-cost debt.
We're talking to Ted Rossman. He is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate. We're talking about paying down your credit cards and using credit cards to your advantage. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the latter. You're listening to WGN. Credit card life. Welcome back. We are talking to Ted Rossman. He is a passionate helper of consumers to maximize rewards, clear out debt, improve financial lives. He is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate. Welcome back to the show. And you know what? If anyone has any questions for Ted about this issue of paying off your credit cards or anything to do with credit cards, give us a call here. I'm sure Ted would be happy to talk to you. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And Ted, you know, you say very generously on the website or with your bio that you are happy to talk to consumers who have questions. How could they reach you off the air?
Sure, absolutely. My email is ted.rossman@bankrate.com. I'm also on social platforms like LinkedIn and X, at Ted Rossman. So, yeah, happy to help. I know people have a lot of questions about debt and rewards and other things.
Yeah, thank you very much for offering that, because I know a lot of people have these issues. You know, you also had some advice about maybe how to pay your credit card. We talked about the zero balance. We talked about the credit counseling. But what about, like, lessening your monthly bills? Like, what are some little things people can do to start paying things down or maybe not even spending as much to incur more costs?
Audit your spending. Look at your bank and credit card statements. Maybe even keep a spending journal, especially if you use cash a lot. You want to track where your money is going. And there might be money leaks, basically unintentional spending. It could take different forms. Maybe it's a free trial that turned into a paid subscription that you forgot about, or something that you subscribed to willingly but you're not really using anymore and you forgot to cancel it. There's that sort of thing. There's also, maybe it's kind of mindless spending. It's the morning coffee. It's the lunch out at work. It's the happy hour. Not to say that you can't do these things or have any fun, but, you know, could you save a little bit by bringing your lunch to work? Maybe not every day, but at least a few times a week. And instead of spending $15 a day on a sandwich and a drink and a bag of chips, you know, you could maybe bring a homemade lunch for $3. You know, it's that sort of thing. Look for ways to cut your expenses, up your income. I'm a big fan of side hustles. That's another lever you could pull to free up more money for credit card debt payoff or other things. About a third of Americans have side hustles. The average monthly income is about $900 a month. That can really add up over the course of the year.
What do you see as a side hustle? We were just talking to some creative people who are talking about creative side hustles, but there's plenty of other ones. What example, can you give us an example of what a side hustle might be?
I was surprised in our research how fragmented it is. The classic examples would be things like ride sharing and food delivery and things like that. There really is no clear majority, though. People are very creative and flexible. Sometimes it's something in your field of work. You know, maybe you could do some, like if you're a writer, you could do some freelance work, or a graphic designer, or something like that. Sometimes it's totally unrelated. I mean, maybe you have a desk job and you love pets and you do some dog walking or pet sitting on the side. I know I used to write part-time for a fantasy football website because that was a passion of mine. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that people do to make some extra money. One idea is to follow your passion. At least you like it, right? And you can make some money on the side. And who knows, maybe it turns into something even bigger for you.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting. I read your bio, Ted, and you said you kind of, your goal in life, you always wanted to be like a sports announcer. Well, you know, you're on the radio today on Super Bowl, so that's about as close as you're going to get today.
But, I know. Yeah, it's not quite the Super Bowl, but yeah, talking about money is the next best thing. But no, I really do like how personal finance affects all of us, and it really is just so important.
No, it is. And it's at the heart of the stress and strain in marriages, in people's happiness. Again, it's not about how much you have, but about not worrying about it. You know, not having that worry when you wake up in the morning that you're not going to be able to meet your needs. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, as a family law lawyer, I see couples who don't communicate. You know, you see a wife who's out, you know, spending money, or a man who's out gambling, and it's like all of a sudden the other spouse looks and sees this huge debt somewhere and has no idea. What do you have any advice to couples on how to communicate about money? I know that's a big question.
It does come back to communication. We did a recent study about what we call financial infidelity, basically secret spending, secret debt, secret bank accounts, secret credit cards. We found that about 4 in 10 people who are married or otherwise living with a romantic partner have kept one of these secrets. So if this describes you, you have plenty of company. But really what I would say is it comes back to trust and communication. I know we all have things we're not totally proud of in our financial past, but it's better to come clean sooner rather than later. The longer the secret festers, the bigger of a problem it can become. I would say it's best to communicate about these things. Maybe you and your spouse could have an informal money date once a month or something like that. You want to talk about which bills are coming up, but ideally you'll also go beyond that and talk about money goals and values, because that's really what this is all about ultimately. It's about pulling in the same direction towards a shared goal. So it's not so much a budget as a way to deny yourself and say, well, you can't buy this or you can't buy that. It's more about, okay, we want to buy a house in the next couple of years. How do we get there? Or how do we retire early? How do we pay off our debt? How do we help our kids go to college? I mean, all these things, it helps to reframe it more positively as far as what are you working towards and how are you going to meet that together. One other thought on this is, it's fine to have some separation as long as you agree upon it. A lot of people do the whole yours, mine, and ours thing where they combine some of their money and they keep some separate. As long as you're acknowledging that separate account and maybe you each get a certain dollar amount or a certain percentage of every paycheck that's yours and yours alone, that can actually be healthy.
And that makes sense. And I do think that, you know, in my field, I do see that people are reluctant to talk about it, especially prior to the marriage when I talk about prenups. And it's like one of the best things in prenups is like you sit and talk about money. Hey, you know, what is your spending style? Because maybe someone came from a wealthy background and that was never an issue and the other party never had any money. Or, you know, I like to buy clothes. No, I like to go on vacation. Like that conversation is something that is really crucial to any relationship. And yet I still feel like people don't want to talk about it. Do you see that?
I agree, and there are some really interesting demographic differences on this, specifically by generation. Gen Zers, far and away, are the most likely to commit financial infidelity, which really surprises me in many respects. This is supposed to be the share-everything generation, right? They share a lot on social media, and yet Gen Zers are far and away the biggest committers of financial infidelity. I think some of it has to do with, well, it's earlier in the relationship, so maybe they haven't figured it all out yet. But also, we're talking about people who are getting married later. They have their own salary. People get kind of set in their ways. Millennials, too. Two-thirds of Gen Zers and half of millennials have committed financial infidelity versus only about 1 in 3 Gen Xers and boomers. And I do think that a lot of it has to do with people getting married later, getting kind of set in their ways of managing their own money, not doing a great job of meshing that with someone else. We also hear, especially from millennials, many had divorced parents, and then they kind of remember what happened there, and they keep some of their own money on the side. And I just think that becomes kind of self-defeating. It's like you're assuming the worst and you're squirreling money away. And I just think openness and transparency is the better way to go. But if you still want some independence within the relationship, do that whole yours, mine, and ours thing. I mean, agree that you each get a certain dollar amount or a certain percentage of every paycheck and the other person's not looking over your shoulder, but at least you've acknowledged that money is there and it's not a secret. That's what's most important.
Agreed. And just know that at the end of the day, however, if you have incurred debt while you were married, or if you acquired assets while you were married, it's likely that the court's going to split both the debt and the assets equally. So if you're a saver and you have a big chunk of money in your account and your spouse doesn't, and you split, it could be that you have to share that money with your spouse. So those are things that, you know, that's why a prenup is really important, because it's really helpful to have a lawyer explain some of those things. We have just a minute, but let's take it another segment. Can you hold us with us, Ted?
Sure, sounds good.
Okay, and I'm going to ask people to call in if you have a question about credit, about credit cards, about rewards. We're going to get into that a little bit. Give us a call here at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're here talking to Ted Rossman. He's a senior industry analyst at Bankrate. Let me give out your contact information because you very graciously offer to talk to people off the radio and to try to steer them in the right direction. Can you give our listeners that information?
Sure. If anybody wants to email me questions, it's ted.rossman, R-O-S-S-M-A-N, at bankrate.com. I'm also at Ted Rossman on X.
And if you, I know we went through a bunch of different pieces of information about credit counseling and about different credit cards that are good for the zero balance. You can either go to the podcast, because this segment will be podcasted on the WGN website, so you can play it back and listen to what Ted has told you, or you can contact him, or you can always contact me, and I can try to get you that information. And my information is WGN at KarenConti.com. We'll be back in a minute, and you're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. We are talking about credit cards and paying off your credit cards, getting out of debt. Ted Rossman, he is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate. Thank you for holding with us. We've got some calls and some really good calls. Jack, can you put Becky on the phone here? Hi, Becky. Welcome to WGN. You have a question for Ted. Hi.
I do. I was wondering if you would, if there's a limit that you would recommend when you're considering transferring a balance to one of those zero balance credit cards. So we have like $20,000 in combined debt.
Okay, yeah. You know, it may be difficult to get a limit that high. A lot of times these balance transfer cards are going to top out somewhere in the $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 range. Now, it depends on your income and your credit score and other factors, but $20,000 in credit card debt, I would say you're probably a better bet for nonprofit credit counseling. I think it's going to be hard to get that high of a balance transfer card limit.
Did that answer your question? Okay, go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much. And secondarily to that, since we're both in the same household, would we each be able to apply for the Simplicity card?
You could, yeah. Now, it would affect each of your individual credit profiles, but yeah, you could apply individually. In fact, most credit cards these days are individual accounts. There's actually very few truly joint or co-signed account. Usually, even if you share it with a spouse, usually one person's the primary and the other one's an authorized user. So yeah, that would potentially be a way to double up your limit. So, you know, in that case, you could probably extend your limit. I still think you'd be hard pressed to go all the way up to $20,000, but the tricky thing about credit cards too is they don't tell you the limit until after you've already applied, and then you've kind of wasted the inquiry on your credit report. And I wish they would tell you before it affects your credit score and profile, but it's the other way around, unfortunately.
Thank you, Becky. I hope
this has been a really helpful program. Thank you so much.
All right, Becky, take care. Good luck with your situation. Let's go to Jason. Can you get Jason on? Hi, Jason. Welcome to WGN. Do you have a question for Ted?
Hi, Karen. How are you today?
Good. Thank you.
Good. 20 years ago, I got a divorce, and there was a lot of credit card debt. I had to go into bankruptcy to take care of that. Since then, I've been in a better place in life. I mean, I'm making more money and my bills are paid off. I pay everything by cash, all my bills, cash or check. How do I gain credit? How do I get credit? I have a couple of credit cards through like Walmart or you know, Farm and Fleet or Menards. And I only use them like once or twice a year. Is my credit growing or am I kind of stagnant right now?
Good question.
So it sounds like you are using credit, so that should be helping your credit score as long as you pay on time and keep your debt low. You can actually check at annualcreditreport.com. That's a free resource to check your credit reports, or you can get free scores from MyFICO.com or Experian.com. You can, you know, check where you stand. But actually, responsible use of a credit card is a great way to build credit. So that could involve maybe getting, it sounds like you already have credit, but maybe for someone else who's looking to build or rebuild, I mean, it could even be a secured card where you put down a deposit. It could be a student card if you're a student. You know, those tend to be easier options to get. Someone could piggyback off a parent as an authorized user. You know, these are often sort of credit builder tools. There is an element of it takes credit to get credit, and sometimes that's a tricky thing for people. There are also things like Experian Boost that can help you improve your score by, with your permission, they're going to look at your bank account for things like on-time cell phone payments and utilities and streaming services. That can be a way to boost your credit score as well.
And obviously, it's smart to put those on auto pay so you're always on time, right?
That's the thing, yeah. You just want to make sure that you're paying on time. The best way to use a credit card is like a debit card. You pay in full, you don't owe any interest, but yet you get benefits like rewards and credit building and convenience and all those good things.
Thank you. Thank you for the call, Jason. Good luck. I think I saw you online talking about using retail cards versus Visa debit, Visa cards and the general credit cards. Is there a better card to use? If you're going to buy something at Walmart, should you be using Walmart or should you be using another credit card?
You have to be especially careful about the interest rates on these store cards. The average among store cards is about 30%.
Wow.
Versus about 20% for general purpose cards. Now, if you pay in full, the interest rate doesn't matter, of course. It's just a slippery slope. Store cards are actually often a gateway. It's often people's first card. They tend to be easier to get. That's part of why they charge such high interest rates. Sometimes they can be a lender of last resort, too. You know, like if you really need a new set of tires or a new refrigerator and you don't have the money and then the store has their own credit card, that's some of the appeal. My favorite industry saying about credit cards is they're like power tools. They could be really useful or dangerous. It's all about how you use them. And that's especially true with store cards. Sometimes they really work for you. Like if you're loyal to Amazon or Target and you use their card and you get 5% back every time you shop there and you pay in full so you don't owe interest. Or one other time they work for you is the sign-up bonus. It's often a percentage off your first purchase. I have a coworker who saved a lot of money on appliances doing this, where he got one of the big home improvement stores' credit cards and saved 20% off like a whole kitchen renovation. That can be useful provided you pay it off and you don't owe interest.
Interesting. And our prior list, I think it was Jason, talked about going bankrupt. And I do see that a lot when people get divorced, you know, their finances kind of cave in. There's attorney's fees, all kinds of stuff goes on. And at what point, and I know this, you're not a bankruptcy lawyer, but, you know, at what point do you start to say, I should consider bankruptcy, I should consider consulting a bankruptcy attorney?
That can be part of the nonprofit credit counseling process, actually. Many of them are also accredited bankruptcy counselors, and they can help people make that decision. I tend to think it's more of a last resort. I mean, I like to think that there are other ways to sort it out. But sometimes, and I've actually heard this from the credit counselors themselves, sometimes they believe it is the best option to get that fresh start. And, you know, yes, it's going to hurt your credit for a while, up to 10 years. But, you know, sometimes it is viable. Sometimes it can be avoided. But that's a discussion worth having with someone like Money Management International. It's one of the ways that they can be a trusted resource and an advocate for you.
And they don't have an agenda, you know, at all on those things, which is very, very important. We're talking to Ted Rossman. We're going to have him hang on. We've got a bunch of calls that are coming in. If you have a question for Ted about credit card debt, about credit card management, what kind of credit cards to use, please give us a call here or text us 312-981-7200. And Ted, can you give out your contact information if people have questions off the air?
Sure, I can be reached at email at ted.rossman@bankrate.com. You can also contact me on LinkedIn or X or other social platforms. My X username is at Ted Rossman.
Thank you so much, and let's take a break now. You're listening to the Karen Conti Show, WGN. Welcome back. We are talking about credit cards. We're talking about debt. We're talking about how to get rid of your credit card debt and use credit cards to your advantage. Give us a call here. I've got some texts coming in, and I've got some calls, 312-981-7200. We're talking to Ted Rossman. Let us go to Laura. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Ted.
Yes. Oh, I'm so happy for this show. Thank you, Karen. I have bad credit. I'm trying to get it worked back together. I have only been using a debit card because I don't seem to qualify for any credit cards that I've tried to get. So I'm told, and I do shopping online, I pay bills online, they say you shouldn't do anything with a debit card online. So, like, how am I able to get a credit card to use online when I can't? I don't know what to do.
I would suggest a secured credit card. So this involves putting down a deposit that serves as the credit line. It's probably going to be a few hundred dollars. So there's not a ton of purchasing power there, but you can hopefully grow over time and actually relatively quickly. Some of these will commit that after 6 months of responsible usage, they'll consider giving you your deposit back and graduating you to a card with a higher limit. Discover and Capital One both have good secured credit cards. Amazon has a secured credit card. That can be a really good credit building tool.
Oh, very good. Oh, you're both very helpful, and I appreciate your input.
Good luck,
it's
Laura.
It's really going to help me a lot. Thank you, Karen.
All right, good luck. And I think this question from a texter is very similar. I have a question about my credit union credit debit card. Am I gaining credit score by using that? I don't get a monthly credit card bill, but I do use it as credit rather than debit. Is that building credit?
If it's a debit card, it's not building credit. I think what the listener is talking about is sometimes at the point of sale, like I've seen this at the gas station, sometimes there's a button where it says, do you want to run it as credit or debit? That's a little bit of a misnomer. That actually refers more with some of the back-end processing. It's not really, you know, it's not converting a debit card into a credit instrument. It's more just kind of the behind-the-scenes rails. Debit usually processes right away, and the money comes out right away. Credit, you know, maybe it comes out in a day or two. It's probably a little inside baseball for the average person. But, you know, if it's a debit card, if it's linked to your checking account and money is coming out kind of like cash, that is not credit. But like I said before, I love the idea of using a credit card like a debit card. The lines kind of blur. Credit, of course, is when someone's extending you a loan or a line of credit. But, you know, really the best practice to be in is if you can be among the half of credit card holders who are paying in full every month, because then you get rewards, you get credit building, you get other benefits. So, you know, this approach isn't for everybody. I know some people get into trouble with credit card debt, but if you can use a credit card and pay it off right away, that represents the best of all worlds.
Ted, you know, I have a texter who said, hey, I've got a great, crazy idea. Just live within your means. And I'm sure that was a little facetious and easier said than done. I mean, however, you know, it is. It's sort of like if you want to lose weight, you eat less and exercise more. Like, no one wants to hear that, but it's the truth. So what are the words of wisdom you tell people? How do you frame it? So again, you talked about this. It's not like we're going on a diet here. It's that we're working toward a financially a happy goal. Like, how do you phrase it to people so that they can live within their means and be happy with it?
Well, first of all, if you have credit card debt, no shame. I mean, half of credit card holders do. We're talking about millions and millions of people. And contrary to popular belief, it's usually a practical cause. It's usually either an unexpected expense, like a medical bill or a car repair or a home repair, or it's just day-to-day living outpacing your paycheck. And that's been all too common the past few years with high inflation and people are financing gas and groceries and other things. So, you know, this gets to sort of a difficult catch-22 out there, which is people don't like high credit card rates, right? Nobody wants to pay 20 or 30%. But access to credit is important. And this is actually playing out in the political landscape right now where there's actually a bipartisan effort to cap credit card rates.
Yes.
It was something President Trump talked about on the campaign trail. You're talking about a 10% cap. Bernie Sanders and Josh Hawley introduced this last week in the Senate. Two very different ideologies, you know, conservative Republican, liberal, you know, and Sanders. But, you know, the 10% cap, I actually think could really have unintended consequences. Not that I want people to pay high credit card rates, but access to credit is important. And the banks say that they just couldn't afford to lend if the cap was that low. What I think is really the best advice at the end of the day is, do the best you can to pay it off as quickly as possible. You know, you could take advantage of a 0% balance transfer. You know, try to use credit as best you can to avoid these interest fees. I understand you may have to carry a balance once in a while, but you want to limit that as much as possible. But I do worry sometimes these suggested reforms go so far that there could be a backlash in the other direction. And then the unintended consequence is it becomes harder for people who really need credit to get it.
Ah, that could happen. And just not to get political, but there was a news story while we were taking a break that the administration is looking to, if not has already, shut down the Consumer Protection Agency. I don't know much about that agency, but Ted, I'm sure you do. What do you think of that? What does that agency do? And what are the possible repercussions of that agency folding?
It's been polarizing since its inception. I mean, this was really the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren. Progressives say that it's a great thing. It saved people billions of dollars. It's been a watchdog that's looked out for consumer interests and imposed fines and other sanctions on financial industry wrongdoers like banks and lenders that have treated people poorly. Meanwhile, others, mostly Republicans, say that it's just gone way too far. It's kind of, you know, this rogue organization that's kind of run amok, and it just needs to be reined in. And, you know, it's very politicized, and kind of everything is these days. It's sort of hard to avoid that. You know, sometimes I would again say there can be unintended consequences. Like, case in point, the CFPB recently tried to bring the average credit card late fee down from $32 to $8. And the intention was just to save people a lot of money and saying that, well, it doesn't really cost the company $32 if you're late. Why don't we just bring this down? The banks were very upset about it, of course, and they actually got it thrown out in court. But, you know, the tricky thing is this whack-a-mole thing that goes on, where one fee goes down and another one pops up. I mean, not to be cynical, but I feel like that's often what the financial industry response is. So I would say at the end of the day, regardless of which way the regulatory winds are blowing, it's just really important to do the best you can to stay on the right side of this. And I know, you know, in an ideal world, nobody would have credit card debt and everything would be great, but you know, try to take matters into your own hands to bring your personal credit card rate down, you know, without necessarily waiting for help from Washington or some other corner.
That's always good advice, I guess. Sam, you have a question for Ted. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good.
So anyway, I have a question. My daughter has credit card debt, high credit card debt, and I was wondering how could she combine it all into one payment? Could you help her with that? Because she can't afford an apartment, and this credit card debt is really eating her up with the interest rate and all the payments she has. I mean, she must have like 10 credit cards that she's paying off on, and it just really is sickening. So Could you advise me what to tell them?
And Sam, we kind of covered this, but I'm going to have Ted cover it again. And then along with that question, I want to ask you, how many credit cards should a person have? And can you answer both of those questions, Ted?
The average American has about 4 credit cards. Now, for some people, the answer should maybe be 0. You know, if you really are getting into trouble with it. You know, on the other hand, I know people that have 30 credit cards and they get great benefits and they pay them off right away and they love the free travel. You don't want to open 30 credit cards overnight. I mean, that's a gradual process. But, you know, honestly, for most people, the right answer is probably like 2 or 3. But don't dig the hole any deeper. I mean, I know life gets in the way sometimes and you need to finance things, but you want to get a handle on this. My favorite form of debt consolidation is a 0% balance transfer card, like the Citi Simplicity or the Wells Fargo Reflect. You can wrap a bunch of high-cost debt into one of these, avoid interest for up to 21 months. Nonprofit credit counselors like Money Management International have their own debt management plans that can be a form of consolidation. Personal loans are another one. If you have really good credit, maybe you get a 7% rate over 5 years or something like that. But, you know, my favorite would be the 0% balance transfer option, if you can be disciplined about paying it back. If you need a little extra help or you don't have great credit, that's when I would say go to a reputable nonprofit credit counselor like Money Management International or GreenPath.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you so much for the call. We just have just a few seconds left, but Ted, I wanted to hear, what do you say to your kids about money and about credit cards when they're maybe going off to college and starting to apply? Give us your very quick 20-second words of advice.
It's great to add your teens as authorized users on your credit cards, because as long as you're using credit responsibly, that can give them a leg up in their own credit journey. And it's important to understand the difference between credit and debit or cash. You know, credit cards feel like magic money sometimes, but you got to pay it back. That's an important lesson to learn. I'm actually a big fan of giving kids access to credit early with some training wheels, because it feels different than paying with cash, and you need to figure out how to not overdo it.
Ted, quickly, what's your email address for our listeners if they have a question for you?
Ted.Rossman@bankrate.com.
Thank you so much for hanging with us and answering all these really important questions. People were very grateful for your advice. I wish you would come back again and join us. Thanks, Ted.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right. You take care.